Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. The Flannelly Show coming to you live from New York. And do we have news? Yes, we have news. A young fellow, and I need not be corrected on that because he's 18 years old. And he is the son of Ronan Downs, who owns a number of restaurants in New York. As a matter of fact, if you go downtown New York and you find yourself on Stone Street, you can look right, left, every which way. And Downs either owns it or is a senior partner in it. But Thomas, I want to welcome. Tom, you're very welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, let me ask you, because I think people might say, well, what is a young fellow like Thomas Downs doing in terms of preparing for a run for mayor of New York City? We'll start there. You've been thinking about this for a while, right?
Yeah, it's been over 5-6 years now. A lot of it really came down to the past year and a half when we actually became eligible to run. So that was filing with the city, campaign finance board, and the IRS, just to make sure that we were more than above board to actually run.
Yeah, okay. Now, most people who are running for mayor start off with a lot of political experience, or whether that's, or at least that's the first card that they throw out on the table in running. Experience. We have to assume that if you're, even at your tender age, if you have been thinking about running for mayor, obviously then begs the question as to what your views are with respect to, you know, not just the current mayor, but previous mayors. Have you found something right or wrong with any or all of them?
Well, I think our current mayor really didn't do the best of jobs. He really dropped the ball in a lot of places, especially when it came to reforming our public housing and actually fixing our public hospital system. And unfortunately, the pandemic hit in 2020, right at the end of his term. So it really kind of made it hard to judge him for the past couple months and definitely this past year, just because it was really an untenable situation that any politician had difficulties facing. And in hindsight, it's very easy to point out the flaws, but when it's actually happening, it's really, I commend the current mayor and pretty much any politician who has survived this time, just because of the amount of work it did take to try and get this under control in New York City, especially.
Yeah. Obviously, if you become mayor, you are going to get a massive amount of criticism, just in the sense that any mayor, if you don't have the balance of as many friends as enemies, many people would say you're not doing that much. Are you prepared for the, particularly over the next few months, the hammering that candidates are subject to?
I am more than prepared for it, and I welcome it, actually. I think that hammering me in any which way and actually throwing criticism and questions my way is one of the best ways for me to explain who I am as a person and show that I'm one of the most capable people to actually hold the job. The more criticism I receive and the more questions that are asked, the more I think I can really show who I am and show my capabilities. And I would be concerned if I didn't get that criticism and questioning, because that would show that people weren't taking this seriously.
Now, I want to ask you about what is known worldwide, and that is the mass exodus from your New York and my New York due to the onslaught and the, you know, the scourge of the pandemic. Could that have been handled differently? Was there something, granted that it was a mammoth task to begin with, in handling and trying to bring some degree of sanity to, you know, the situation, and particularly with the change in the presidency and the administration? What, well, first of all, how do you feel about, again, the exodus and what's your feeling in that?
I think I stayed in New York. I will continue to stay in New York. I think that people who had the means to leave and who really felt uncomfortable being in New York City, and especially when they put their family first to leave New York City, did the right thing. And in their minds, if they do the right thing, that's all that matters. Now, recent reports that I have seen have shown many of the people who left the city to places like Albany, for example, were already looking to move back to New York City. And plenty of people around this country are now looking to move to New York City with pretty favorable rents handed out by landlords who are desperate to get paying tenants in. So I think that we will come back from that exodus, and the people who left will hopefully come back one day. Mm-hmm. But if they weren't comfortable in New York City, I want people to be comfortable. And if you're not comfortable here, I understand. Good. I wish you the best, but yeah. We're going to get the city back on track. We're going to fix the safety issue with the NYPD in the city, and coming out of the pandemic, we'll be stronger than ever.
Now, on again, you touched on it there with lens, you know, rents being lower now, real estate, you know, to, in order to whether those who left come back or not, or a goodly number, a lot of people will be looking at New York City. It is the capital of the world. And, yes, it has gone through a horrific time. But how do you feel about the fact that in order to get people to come to New York, to stay in New York, and to thrive in New York, you know, it is this a blessing in disguise to have everything, the wealth and the joy of New York? Do you think that's going to, you know, entice a lot of people to take advantage of, you know, of the situation as it is?
Yeah, I think a lot of people will be enticed to come back to New York City and enjoy New York City. But one of the things that the pandemic granted us on the good side of it was really a reset button for New York City in how we handle things. It's going to allow us to move forward stronger and improve the areas which we need to, which frankly comes down to housing and public services. It has given us the opportunity to really take a hard look at what we need to do to entice people to come back and make New York City livable again without having to be priced out of your home, be priced out of transportation, and just effectively not be able to live in New York City any longer.
You are an Irish African America. How much of your background prompted you to run for mayor this time around?
I would say a lot of it. And that comes down to a background where I'm not afraid to speak my mind, and I'm not afraid to really put myself out there for the betterment of this city and the betterment of this world. I think being Irish really gave me a good sense of community and really helped me to understand enjoying life. And my African-American background showed me the struggles of life and that you just can't take it, and you got to stand up and say what you're thinking and actually take action to make things better. So both those backgrounds coming together, it's really a perfect storm.
You know, a lot of people, when there's reference to the Me Too movement, you know, assume that that has, you know, that is confined to obviously, equality for women, equality for jobs, standing, equal pay, all of that. But it goes beyond that, or at least you feel that you know, there are other issues like climate change, for instance, something that many politicians heretofore only skirted. Many politicians, and they've had varying degrees of support, or many would feel that, well, okay, this is something new and we'll study it, rather than what you have been doing, and that is actually doing something about it, getting involved, bringing the... Are we past the awareness stage yet, in your opinion?
100% we're past the awareness stage. One of the things that I bring to the table that no other candidate possibly could is the fact that this is my future. What happens in this election, what happens in the next, frankly, 3 years, will determine whether or not I will be able to still live in New York City 60 years from now, and whether or not it will be underwater. This is way past being aware of it, and this is now in the stage of, if we do not take immediate action, 60 years from now, we will be facing a much different world, away from coastal areas, away from a semblance of what we remember as seasons, and see it as something that can threaten future generations. So we need to take action now, and if we don't, we're doing a disservice to the human race.
Yeah. For those who may have felt that Hurricane Sandy, which devastated many areas, but most of all in the New York area, and obviously on Long Island and several other places along the way, there are those who think, well, you know, that was kind of a that was a fluke, and there were many who were equally of the opinion that it could never happen again. Can you tell us about the reality of, not just, say, Hurricane Sandy, and that's just as an example, but the reaction from New York City and right across the country, but particularly in our area here, in terms of preparing better for next time around? And I think most people would assume that that's a step in the right direction, and maybe with God's help, the next time there is something equal to Sandy, you know, we'll be able to withstand it.
I think we definitely are taking the right steps to protect human life in preparing for the next event, because it will come. Hurricane Sandy, with the metrics we had, was a fluke, and unfortunately a combination of many things that created what it was in the Northeast. But at the end of the day, that is unfortunately going to become more of a reality years down the road. And our preparedness now will save lives, yes. And I thank the city and I thank the government for acknowledging that this will happen years down the road, and that we've started elevating homes and actually creating systems to ensure that people will have access to emergency services and power. And unfortunately, the lives lost in Hurricane Sandy really taught us as well to heed the warnings and to actually leave when we're told to by the government, because it will be dangerous to stay. So unfortunately, Hurricane Sandy happened, but I think it really was a wake-up call, especially for the Northeast, that had previously been kind of impervious towards hurricanes.
Let me ask you, there's an interesting follow-up, and it is something that most politicians would prefer to stay away from. Democrats, Republicans, independents, and you are running as an independent. But how are, obviously, as an Irish African American, firsthand some of the realities of didn't start this year or last year, but police brutality, police, attention or lack thereof of, the black, brown community. And what's your feeling, first of all, on that?
Well, I'm just going to start off by saying that any abuse of power by the police is wrong. And the people who have lost their lives at the hand of police within this nation, it's very sad to see. And as a young brown man in this country, I am one of the prime demographics of what that violence may be. But in New York City, I think that the NYPD has taken a lot of steps in the right direction since the death of Eric Garner. They haven't fully come around, but it has not been to as much of a fault as their own. Our current administration's treatment of the NYPD, along with the seeming inability for them to actually reach across the aisle to work towards positive reform, is disheartening. If we're going to go ahead as a society, we need to bring both sides together, both the victims and the criminals in this case, and work out meaningful solutions towards positive change to where we can see a police department that not only protects our communities, but is a part of our communities as well and not alienated by them. I think that we can reach that level with a lot of cooperation, and it's not going to be comfortable conversations to have, but they're going to be necessary conversations.
Do you agree that you can't have all of the training, additional training, sensitivity training, and defund the police department at the same time?
I fully agree with that. Listen, the NYPD's budget is large, but the NYPD also encompasses a lot of different things within the city towards protection and the continuation of actually having public safety, from precincts to then counterterrorism to Marines to aviation to even detective squads that investigate heinous actions. Our police budget is large, but our city's budget is much larger at around $96 to $98 billion, I believe.
Yep.
So defunding the police, I don't think really solves anything, especially when we want to increase training and increase awareness and increase their ability to serve the community.
My guest, of course, is Thomas Downs, an 18-year-old New Yorker, born and bred in New York, and he is addressing some of the issues that I think most listeners and beyond will probably question you and all the other candidates. Do you think it's a coincidence that in defunding the police, in having such a rash of criticism, some of which didn't start any time lately, and the fact that crime is rampant in New York City. Is there a correlation there?
I wouldn't say there would be a correlation in defunding the police and the increase of crime in New York City. Defunding the police, from what I can tell in New York City, really hasn't happened as much as it was promised, which is a failing of the administration as well. But I would say it correlates to being scared for the police being scared to actually do their jobs in New York City. We've removed their personal liability protections, and we've made it so that them doing their jobs correctly can actually land them being fired. All it takes is one accusation and a police body camera footage to not be released in a timely manner. And the news media, unfortunately, takes it and runs with it. And that leads to someone's life being destroyed, and it's not right. So if I was a cop in New York City, I'd be scared to do my job. I wouldn't want to put myself out there, especially in minority communities, to possibly lose my job, my pension, and my livelihood, not to mention not being able to show my face in public because you're deemed a racist and a murderer. So really, I think it comes down to a fear of doing their job instead of actually defunding the police and a lack of support from the administration in them doing their job.
But also, in defunding, you're also removing very significant branches of the police department. Again, when the cuts come in budgets, it's one has to watch that too. Anyway, I want to ask you about the established political parties. We have the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, and then, of course, many independents like yourself. But the Democrats and the Republicans, at a national level, and we see it in, not to the same degree, but in New York City, New York State, and the neighboring states, we see that it has become a political football. And when we have events like Memorial Day, which just passed, and we're coming up to the July 4th weekend, when we have people who are reluctant in some areas to put out an American flag because, God forbid, that would might indicate that you're a right-wing conservative, how does that hit somebody like yourself?
I am someone who loves this country, and when it comes to Memorial Day, I treat it as a day of reverence to remember those who we've lost in the service of this country, who have been protecting this country. The Republican and Democratic parties throughout the country, I think, serve a very good purpose on a federal level because they help to bring a lot of ideas together under kind of one umbrella to then be presented in Congress as representing a district. At a local level, however, especially states and cities like New York, the diversity alone, I think we need to move away from possibly a two-party system and just have some other options there, because I don't think everyone can align just solely with one or the other party, especially on a local level, when a local level has so much of an influence to the city council person who you elect, the mayor, the comptroller, and the public advocate, that we really need the diversity of candidates from multiple parties to kind of land on something that people can really agree on that matches what their personal views are.
Thomas, I would like you to perhaps, in order of what's important to you, just to refer to the famous adage that everybody says what they would do on day one if they become elected. If you had to take a couple of items that you would address first and foremost as mayor of New York on day one, what might they be?
Well, we're looking at small business recovery, of course, after the pandemic. We're looking at reforming our public hospitals, reforming our public housing, and reforming our public education to actually make sure that they serve the people of the city who need it the most. Really, the first things I'm looking at are those, and really looking at public services and reforming them to make sure that they serve people, and ensuring that our small business owners and small landlords in New York City know that they're not forgotten after this pandemic, and know that we will create services and stand by them every step of the way to ensure that they can get back to business as usual for years to come.
The new normal, again, is something that nobody knows what the new normal is going to be, but you obviously have, you're very committed to New York City, in particular, all five boroughs. And we want to, wish you luck.
Thank you.
And you're going to need, a lot of it, but then so is everybody else who's running for mayor. It would appear that there are numerous candidates, who again will be whittled down, because as of the 22nd of this month of June, one candidate will be picked to represent the Democratic Party. One candidate will be picked to represent the Republican Party, and so a lot of the people who are on those lists will be, shelved. And then there are independents like yourself. You will In fact, you know, and some other independents will wind up running against the best of the, or at least maybe not the best, but the most popular of the Democrats and Republicans. And as you go forth, one thing that will be needed, obviously, is not just moral support, but you're heading into an area that is normally associated with heavy-duty support, financial support. How does your candidacy, are you in a position then to get the matching funds from New York City? Do you qualify for every buck that is donated that you can show you also? What is the formula there anyway? For every dollar,
for every dollar, it's typically matched about, I think, 8 to 1.
Uh-huh.
And with that, it's the threshold of $250,000 raised by 1,000 different individual contributors, of that which only the first $250 contributed counts towards the matching funds. So what the city tries to do is average it out to 1,000 people who do a $250 contribution.
Yeah.
Just to make it so that they're supporting people financially who have shown that they have the support of the public as well.
Excellent. Okay, how do we get more information about you? How do we get in touch with you? How do we follow your progress as you run for the youngest ever candidate for mayor of the city of New York?
So all of the social media is at Downs4Mayor, for being spelt out, and mm-hmm. any contact information should be on there as well. But to get more of an in-depth approach of who I am and what I stand for, you can visit the website downsformayor.nyc, downsformayor.nyc, and that can give you a lot of the information as well.
Okay. Good luck to you, and I'm sure that we'll hear a lot more from you, particularly after the 22nd of this month. My guest, yep. friends, is Thomas Down, an 18-year-old Irish African American running for the office of mayor of the city of New York. And you are listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.
Thank you.